Now Moses was pastoring the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. And when I'm doing family devotions, I always say, and the Mosquitobite. Now, behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. And what now follows are a cycle of five objections and answers, where Moses objects to this plan and God answers him back. Verse 11, But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. Then Moses said to God, Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, What is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am, has sent me to you. God furthermore said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial name to all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt. So I said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite and the Mosquitobite, to a land flowing with milk and honey. They will pay heed to what you say, and you with the elders of Israel will come to the king of Egypt, and you will say to him, The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. So now please let us go a 3 days' journey, into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not permit you to go except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it. And after that, he will let you go. I will grant this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall be that when you go, you will not go empty-handed. That every woman shall ask of her neighbor and the woman who lives in her house articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing, and you will put them on your sons and daughters. Thus you will plunder the Egyptians. Then Moses said, "What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.'" The Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" And he said, "A staff." Then he said, "Throw it on the ground." So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail." So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand. That they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. The Lord furthermore said to him, "Now put your hand into your bosom." So he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. Then he said, "Put your hand into your bosom again." So he put his hand into his bosom again, and when he took it out of his bosom, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. If they will not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign, they may believe the witness of the last sign. But if they will not believe even these two signs or heed what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water which you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." The Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then, go, and I, even I, will be with your mouth and teach you what you are to say." But he said, "Please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will." Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses, and he said, "Is there not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently. And moreover, behold, he is coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I, even I, will be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he shall speak for you to the people, and he will be as a mouth for you, and you will be as God to him. You shall take in your hand this staff with which you shall perform the signs." Then Moses departed and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, "Please let me go, that I may return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see if they are still alive." And Jethro said to Moses, "Go in peace." Now the Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go back to Egypt, for all the men who were seeking your life are dead." So Moses took his wife and his sons and mounted them on a donkey and returned to the land of Egypt. Moses also took the staff of God in his hand. We'll stop reading there. So the book of Exodus comes after the book of Genesis. It's a continuation of the story that the Bible gives to us. And in the book of Genesis, we see creation, you see the fall, you see the effects of the fall during the time of Noah, that it affected everyone. You see God's plan of redemption from that fall through another seed, through a new Adam, who's going to be a son of Abraham. And then you see that it's not Isaac, it's not Jacob, it's not any of the 11 sons, and you think maybe Joseph because of the role he plays. But it ends up being said that it's going to be Judah by the end of the book, who ends up being the lineage of David and ultimately the lineage of Christ. But in the time of the book of Exodus, it ends with Israel in Egypt, and about 300 or so years go by after the death of Joseph, and now there is a new Pharaoh, a whole new, several generations have gone by, and the Egyptians have been suffering some invasions, the famous Hyksos invasion during that time. And so they're a very anxious kingdom. There's lots of war going on. And meanwhile, this Pharaoh has no connections, this new one, to Joseph, or any special relationship. And he's concerned for his kingdom. He's got this people group here. He fears that they will join the revolt of any other, and revolt against them if another kingdom goes to war against them. So he inflicts on them this extra labor. He then tries to get the midwives to kill their children, to snuff them out that way. Then he tries finally to just throw them into the Nile. And it looks bad. And then yet there is this one child from the family of Levi who is put into the Nile and rescued out of the water. He's called Moses, because the word means I drew him out of the water. So there's a sort of Red Sea salvation of Moses already. And Moses is the main character of the book under God. God's always the main character, but humanly speaking, Moses, and everything is centered around him. He's this mediator between Israel and God, mediating in the Exodus, mediating in the giving of the law, mediating in the construction of the temple. Moses could not be overstated that he was used by God in a unique way. As a matter of fact, the Pentateuch ends, book of Deuteronomy ends with this statement. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, for all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh and all his servants and all his land, and for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of Israel. Even into the book of Joshua, immediately Rahab, and they heard of these things. So Moses is famous. He's famous in Christian theology as being the main figure in the Old Testament for the law. He's famous in Islam as a prophet. He's famous in Judaism. Even Sigmund Freud studied Moses, obviously for different reasons, but he's a in all accounts of world history, towering figure. And so there's no doubt about the fact that he was used by God. The people of Israel begin, if you just look at the beginning and the end of the book of Exodus, you see how he was used. The people start at the beginning of the book slaves to Pharaoh. They end the book free servants of Yahweh. They, at the beginning of the book, are building storehouses and things for Pharaoh. At the end of the book, they're building a temple for the living God. And so a lot happens in the middle. They're delivered through these tremendous plagues. God is in a massive way fulfilling His promise that He made in Genesis 3:15. It had two parts to it. It had grace and law. I will provide this seed. And then He shall crush the head of the serpent. So there's this promise that God is going to constantly intervene. The way that He intervened for Eve at the very beginning, after Cain killed Abel, she said, God has given me another son in the place of Abel, for Cain killed him, and she named him Seth. So there's this pattern of God intervening and intervening and intervening. Of course, we have to wait. It's not just intervention. We still need someone to keep the law. So the point to get, though, is that Moses is tremendously used. And the point that I wanted to make this evening is ask, what type of a person was Moses? Because if we agree on the first point, that Moses was tremendously used, the way Deuteronomy portrays him, never before or since has anyone hardly known. Other than Elisha and Elijah, there was never, until the time of Christ, such an outpouring of signs and wonders and mighty power during as comparable to Moses. So what type of person was he? And the reason I want to ask that question and answer it, because if you agree that Moses was mightily used, if you could find out what type of a person he was, then we could know what type of a person God uses. And so that's just what I would like to title this midweek message, what type of a person God uses. And I just want to use very briefly these five objections and answers between God and Moses to discover what type of a person he was. So if you look at the first one, the first cycle, beginning in verse 11 of chapter 3. This is Moses' first objection to God's plan to use him. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt?" So the first characteristic of the type of person that God uses is the kind of person who would react to being called to something where God would use them by saying, "Who am I? Who am I to go do something for God?" And God doesn't give Moses a modern day encouragement as we would, as we're so prone to do. Someone maybe is not good at a sport, but we think it's a parent's job to still tell them they're good at a sport. It's not. But we see that everywhere, right? God doesn't say, "Oh no, you really are someone, Moses." He doesn't disagree with him at all in verse 12. He just adds, he said, "Certainly I will be with you. So you are a nobody, but I will be with you." And that's always the promise of Psalm 23. "Though all of this is around me, he walks through that valley." It's the promise of the Great Commission, very similar to this. "Go, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age." And so this is the first mark. Amazing thought. What kind of a person would God use? Person who doesn't think God would use them, that would say, "Who am I?" Second objection comes in verse 13. "Then Moses said to God, 'Behold, I'm going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, what is his name?'" In other words, they may ask me a theological question that I can't answer. "What about this verse? What about this text? What about this doctrine? What is your view on this? What is your view on this about government? What is your view..." And that's paralyzing to people. I've been paralyzed by that before. What if I get asked this? What if you get asked that? Have you studied this yet? Have you studied that yet? And so really the second mark of someone whom God uses is the type of person who says, "Who are you? Who is the Lord?" A person who feels like they don't know God enough to talk. A person who feels like they could be asked a question that they don't have the answer to. The third objection comes, chapter 4, verse 1. Then Moses, so God encourages him about that. And that's not enough. He's got another one. He says, "What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.'" In other words, there may be no honor for me. People don't honor me. Moses was not persuaded. Everyone wanted to read his post. Everyone wanted to download his sermon. Everybody wanted to know what his thoughts were on various matters. I mean, he clearly is persuaded that people aren't interested in his thoughts or his words. And he knew this, right? He already tried. In chapter 2, you read, he went out one day and he smote this Egyptian. He tried to deliver the people. And they said, "Who made you a ruler over us?" And he fled. And so he's a sojourner. And he had a son and he named him that because he was a sojourner. So he's an outcast. He's an absolute failure. And I don't know how to get this across. I don't even know if it's fully across in my own heart that a man whom God used probably second to no one but Christ was persuaded nobody wanted to hear what he had to say. So, number one, who am I? Number two, who are you? Number three, nobody cares what I have to say. And so God says He will make him care. He'll do the persuading. Well, still not enough. The fourth objection comes in verse 10. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord." So he's not confident. "I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I'm slow of speech, slow of tongue." There's no way. I can't get up in front of people and talk. I can't talk to people. If two people turn and are looking at me, I just clam up and I can't do that. I can't be direct with people. I can't tell people they're wrong. It's just such a grievous experience. I lose my place. I got like a little speech to give and I can't react. It's not organic. It's just not my thing. I can't do it. I don't have the gifts for it. I don't have the abilities for it. Natural ability, spiritual abilities. That's what he's saying. So the fourth mark of the type of person God uses is the type of person who feels like they totally fumble the ball verbally, like they're not a good speaker, they don't have the gifts that are required, they're inadequate. And God's response to him is, again, simply to say, "I'm well aware of the capabilities of your mouth because I made your mouth that way. So I wouldn't ask you to be doing something that I weren't going to equip you to do, that it were not possible to succeed at because of some lack of ability on your part." He says, "Who has made man's mouth? And who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord?" In other words, is it not I, the Lord, that gave you your talking ability and the lack thereof? So he says, verse 12, "Now then go." Now then go. "And I'll be with you." Still that's not enough. And so there's a fifth objection. He just straight up says, "Please," verse 13 of chapter 4, "Lord, now send the message by whomever you choose." Whomever you choose. Your will be done. Right? Just whoever you pick. Please, not me. In other words, this is for someone else to do. I'm sure this is for someone else to do. Someone else has better giftings for this. Someone else has better natural abilities for this. Someone else has a better personality for this. And the Lord responds with more displeasure here, so you can tell that there is a place for humility, but there is kind of a spot where humility bleeds over into unbelief. And it just, you just keep coming up with reasons for failure, and it eventually gets to the point, do you actually believe God is sovereign? Do you actually believe He can do according to His will in heaven and on earth? So this is the fifth time the Lord has told Moses to go. It's time to stop the questions. But he said to him, is not your brother Aaron the Levite there with you? And he speaks fluently. In other words, if there's a gift that you lack, and it's needed for the task, I put people in your life with those particular gifts that you lack so that it can go together and work. And we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 that the Lord has placed gifts in the body, each one just as He desired. Just as He desired. So the sovereign Spirit gives out gifts sovereignly. So what are we saying? Number one, Moses is undoubtedly under Christ the most used by God human being to ever live. So says Deuteronomy. Never before or since. Nobody before or since. So you want to know what type of person God uses. Well, first qualification is to say, who am I? Very low view of yourself. After a lot of failure, I might add. This is after his failure. Number two, to be scared to death that someone might ask you a question about God, a theological question that you can't answer. Number three, to be persuaded no one cares. Like, they don't want to hear me talk. They don't want to hear me explain this. Not just that they don't care because they don't care about the content. Like, I'm just not esteemed in their eyes. They're not asking me. They're not even asking. They don't want to hear it. So that's the third qualification. The fourth is, I'm not able to speak. I'm just not a good speaker. And the fifth is to be persuaded that there's somebody else out there who's more qualified and able to do it than you. Now, maybe to update this some with a couple of closing stories to make it a little bit more real, because Moses is about 3,500 years back that way on the timeline from us. So it may seem distant. When John Piper was either in high school or college, I can't remember, he had a speech class, and he was so terrified of speaking that he could not do it. And he tried to get up there and do it one time. He actually ran out of the classroom. He just was too nervous to speak. Now that's hard to comprehend. I don't know how many sermons he's done since then. And I'm sure you've watched or listened and profited. You have not been persuaded. He's real nervous about doing this. No. Another is, you know of A.W. Tozer. And Tozer obviously was gifted in ways. And the story is he was burdened for his mom's salvation. And so he went to go see her. Eventually thought he was just going to go see her and talk with her about it. And he walks in the living room and she's sitting there, and he had a lot of stuff on his mind that he was going to say. But as soon as the door opened, all he could think to do, he just burst into tears. And he said, "Mom, you're lost." And that was pretty much the gist of what was said and what was shared there, and what led to everything that happened. So, what type of person does God use? It's hard to believe, but it's pretty fitting for why He created the universe the way He did to show His glory. He uses people just like me, Amy, Corey, Charlie, Kevin, Zach. People that you would not expect. All that's required is, like Jeremiah says, to seek Him with all your heart and to be an instrument willing to be used. So, we've all been called to tremendous things in our lives, and it's such an encouraging thing to see that Moses is one of the most used people by God in the history of the world, and to see what type of person he actually was before that began. So I'm thankful for this account that the Lord has placed into His Word and the encouragement He gave to me this week. So I just simply pass that on to y'all. It can be used by any of us, by whatever task that it is that we're facing. And it should give us great, should just give us an attitude that no matter how hard it is, who knows what the Lord could do? Who knows what the Lord will do? And we should enter into it with joy and faith, whatever it is. So with that, we'll close. And see if Alex, would you mind closing?